Afternoon. How are we? We good? All right. Well, hey, it really is a super big honor for me to be here with y'all. And I'm just going to speak like I normally speak, and you'll have to translate as best you can as I'm learning your language. Even though it's similar, there are things like we say no worries, you say no dramas, or sometimes no worries or no stress, right? All those things work. So if I say y'all, that means you all, okay? So just go with me on that. I'm honored to be here. I'm humbled to be here. I was just texting with my wife and some friends and just saying, as the panel was discussing, I wish you could see, and I loved how Adam said it yesterday, and I don't know if this is a Aussie phrase or not, but the gospel's speeding ahead down under. It's just so encouraging. It's so beautiful to go halfway across the world, literally, and to see the gospel impact that you're having. That this gospel message, and I said this to the group that I was with yesterday morning, that started with a small band of people in Jerusalem, and that somebody told somebody who told somebody who told somebody who told you. And at some point, your heart was quickened to life, right? That you were once blind, now have sight. You were once dead, now have life. You were once not a part of a family. You are now part of a family. You were once an enemy, now you're a friend. You were once estranged, and now you're at the table. Like, that happened not because you went to Jerusalem to hear a message, but because somebody brought that message to you and you feel compelled to take that message out to others. That's incredible. And that's not just happening in Dallas or in the States, but it's happening all over the globe. And so for me to come across the world and to be welcomed and to be received by you in a spirit and a gospel hospitality, I'm just encouraged. And so I'm thankful. I pray that our time is helpful. I'm going to leave some time at the end just in case it's not helpful. Then we'll have some Q&A and maybe answer some things that are totally unrelated to what I'm going to talk about. I'm going to spend some time walking through a grid, a rubric, if you will. And the grid or the rubric is something that just we call shorthand at the village, the five C's. And so if you were to ask a staff member what the five C's are, hopefully they'd be able to tell you, but they would certainly know that they're important, that they're a thing, right? That they're a grid, that they've become a filter by which we look out and that we look within. And let me tell you what I mean by that. So as I'm kind of walking through this talk, here's the context by which I want you to evaluate it and understand it and consider it. I want you to look out at your team. And that could be a staff team, that could be an elder team, that could be a deacon team, it could be a leadership team, it could be paid or non-paid. But you're looking out at a team, and you're evaluating that team through this rubric, but that you're also looking in the mirror, okay? And as you look in the mirror, you're evaluating yourself according to this rubric as well. So the five C's, it's not perfect, it's not complete, it's not total, it's not gospel, it's just better than what we had, okay? It's something. Right? And so sometimes you know this, and just candidly, sometimes something is better than nothing. Like, you just have to start with something. Like, you just have to get out of the gate and go with it. And so if this is helpful for you to take and get out of the gate with, then tweak it. Then make it work in your context. And then I would also say this, that the village church is different than your church. Right? It's different. We're in the DFW Metroplex. Right? We're in the southern states of the United States. We're in a suburban area by and large. Some of our campuses are not in suburban areas. We're predominantly in an affluent part of the city. And so you're going to have to translate this into your context. So if I say something and you think, man, that doesn't work in my context, then just remember what I just said. You have to take this and translate this into your context, okay? Let me give you the five C's quickly. And then I'm going to spend some time walking through and talking about them. The five C's are this: calling, character, competency, capacity, and chemistry. Calling, character, competency, capacity, chemistry. Several years ago, I've been at the Village now for 15 years on staff, and Natalie and I came over just before, maybe about 7-8 months into our marriage, and we came to the Village. I did college and singles for a year, And we were a church basically made up of college and singles at that point. I did that for a year, then I transitioned into an executive pastor role. I did that from 2005 into 2010. And then in 2010, we shifted our organizational structure to where we now have three lead pastors, as Dave was mentioning. So Brian Miller, Matt Chandler, and myself serve as the lead pastors of the Village Church. And I can remember early on, as we were kind of growing like weeds, that I needed something, because we had nothing, I needed something to help me think about hiring, adding to the team, okay? And somebody said, hey, there's this book out there, and you may want to read this book. And I didn't have time to read the book, so I said, just give me the cliff notes, right? Just tell me what the chapter is that I need to know about. And he said, this is how you build a dream team, right? You build a dream team through calling, or through character, competency, and chemistry. And so I thought, that's great, three C's, calling, or character, competency, and chemistry. But see, here's what started happening. As I started leading and navigating, that I started realizing that those three C's alone didn't encapsulate and capture all of the challenges that I was facing in hiring and in firing, in adding to the team and letting go from the team, in cultivating the team and developing the team. Like, there were tweaks, there were conversations that just didn't seem to fit in those buckets. And so then we added calling, and then we added capacity. And so I got the three C's from somebody else, but all of the data underneath these five C's now is just been kind of brewed in the laboratory of the Village Church. So it works for us. And I want to talk about it like this. The first C is calling. And when I'm talking about calling, I'm talking about two different aspects of calling. First and foremost, fundamentally and most importantly, I'm talking about the call of adoption. That you have been called a son and a daughter before you were ever called to ministry. So if you're thinking about adding to your team, that you're building a team, and you're kind of looking out and considering what is important when we're bringing men, women onto this squad, then I need them to know, and I need them to have at their core, at their base, most fundamental and foundational to them, is the fact that they are first and foremost a child of God. Because you know this, ministry's tough. And it doesn't matter your context or your place. It's tough because people are tough. It's tough because situations are tough. It's tough because sin is deceitful. And it brings loss. It's just tough. And you will struggle as you're looking out at your team and as you're looking at the mirror of yourself, asking questions. Like, am I going to measure up? I feel inadequate. The task seems big. I'm not sure I can preach like him. I'm not sure I can lead like her. You ever felt diminished like that? Discouraged? You ever dropped the ball? Made a mistake? A costly one? And then all of a sudden you realize, to Guy's point this morning, those questions of idolatry start to bubble up. And the questions of approval. And the questions of loves. And the questions of all of these things start to churn, and ministry has a unique capacity just to reveal idolatry. And so what I need to go back to in that moment is not this: I've been called to ministry. What I need to go back to is not, but I'm really good. What I need to go back to is not, look how big my church is. What I have to go back to is first and foremost, this reality: I have been loved, called, and kept by the Lord Jesus Christ. Because tomorrow it may go, and the church may shrink, and my leadership may fizzle and fade away. But the one reality that will not is what Jude says at the beginning of his book. Jude, a servant of Jesus Christ and brother of James, to those who are called, beloved in God the Father, and kept for Jesus Christ. May mercy, peace, and love be multiplied to you. So, pastor, leader, minister, Christian, the first and foundational C is the C of calling. You're a child, that you're loved, that you're cared for, that you're loved, called, and kept in him. And the challenge is, if you, in your context, assume this rather than speak it, if you just let it lay underneath the surface rather than bringing it to the front of the room, if it's not the centerpiece at the table, but it's an appetizer or a side dish,
then what will happen is you will eventually let that slide and it won't become the reality that everything orbits around in your culture. Because competency, and we're going to talk about it, it matters. It just doesn't matter like this. Your calling to vocational ministry, it matters. It just doesn't matter like this. This thing is irrevocable, right? So calling, first and foremost, the call to adoption. But then there's also a call to ministry. And so as we're looking at bringing somebody onto the team, even as I'm looking and evaluating my own heart, and I shared this with the room yesterday, that when I want to kind of evaluate bringing somebody on, I'm asking the question, do they seem called? Do they seem called to this work, committed to this work, committed to this people? Is there a sense, as Spurgeon would describe, one, the all-absorbing desire for the work, that's this internal flame, this burden that's there. Do they long for it? Do they want to do it? But then also, is there this external affirmation where other people see it? So again, call to adoption over here, foundational, formational. The second piece of that is the call to the vocation, the call to the work. And the call to the work has two points. The internal call, what Spurgeon describes as the all-absorbing desire for the work. But then the external affirmation. That somebody else, particularly my community, would look and say, yes. Yes, I see that. We see that. We affirm that. It may be raw. It may be green. It may be young. It may be underdeveloped. But is it there? And what I'm saying, if we're bringing somebody on, and they may have a real strong sense of internal calling, but there's an absence of external affirmation, then I'm not saying they're not called. I'm just saying we're not calling them. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's just too much at stake. There's too much. It's too heavy. The load is too much to bear. I need somebody who can put their head on their pillow at night and know that they're a child of God and that they've been called and commit to these people and this work. And that they believe that and others believe that in them. Okay, calling. I was reading a book by a guy named Laszlo Bock called Work Rules. And I don't know that you need to read it. It's a book about Google's culture. And particularly their development culture on staff. And what Bach was saying is as he's bringing people, he kind of oversees all their HR, as they're bringing people onto their team, they want people who have an owner mentality rather than an employee mentality. An owner mentality rather than an employee mentality. Think about this. Talk to me. What's the difference between the two? How does an owner think differently than an employee? Talk to me. Skin in the game. Full skin in the game. How else? Initiative. Like if they don't, who will? What else? Confidence. Like this is my baby. This matters. Heart for it. Like you're starting something. You believe in this. You own this thing. What else? Forward thinking. You can't afford just to stay stuck in the present or stuck in the past. You've got to be driving forward. And we could go on and on and on. But an employee, it's just a gig. We clock in, we clock out. It's just a thing. It's 9 to 5. But the owner doesn't have that luxury. The owner cares about every aspect of the company or the organization or the business. Because they understand that all of the components fit into a greater whole of moving this organization forward. And so if you have a youth minister who only cares about next generation in youth ministry, specifically high school ministry, but couldn't give a flip about preschool, that's an employee. I want an owner. I want somebody who understands why the little ones matter as much as the big ones and everybody in between. And that as we're looking over budgets and allocations and space and resources, that this person gets why that person's needs are just as important as we're considering what it looks like to move the mission forward. Does that make sense? Yeah. So as we're thinking about calling, this matters. Moving into character. Character is this. As Patrick Lencioni would say, it's permission to play. Like you got to have it. Jesus said, your yes is your yes, your no is your no. I read a book several years ago, and this one I think is worthwhile. It's called The Leadership Challenge by two guys named Kuzes and Posner. I think I'm saying it right. I don't know, but I'm saying it confidently. listen to what they say. And I think this is interesting. Let me say this. The primary attribute that people look for in leadership, check this, is not a skill, it's a virtue. It's not a skill, it's a virtue. Listen to their quote. It's clear that if people anywhere are to willingly follow someone, whether it be into battle or into the boardroom, the front office or the front lines, they first want to assure themselves that the person is worthy of their trust. They want to know that the person is truthful, ethical, and principled. When people talk to us about the qualities they admire in leaders, they often use integrity and character as synonymous with honesty. No matter what the setting, everyone wants to be fully confident in their leaders, and to be fully confident, they have to believe that their leaders are people of strong character and strong integrity. Several years ago, Matt and I were in a meeting with a church that was dwindling in our city, and there was a conversation about us potentially merging with that church. It's a church in Dallas. It's a somewhat of a historic church located in a strategic part of the city. And we're sitting around the conference table with the pastor and Matt and me, and he's talking, and we're getting a little background, and he says, I play football, American football. And in fact, I'm the record holder in the state of Florida for rushing. So like a running back, you know, you guys get this, hopefully some of you. I don't know if you do or don't. It's a sport that we play in the States. Well, here's the deal. Let me give you just a little context. There are three states that produce the majority of the football players that are elite: California, Florida, and Texas. There are others, but they're not worth talking about, okay? So those are the three primary. So if you're looking at collegiate recruiting or university recruiting, those are the three hot states. So to say that you're the record holder for the leading rusher in high school history, okay, state history in the state of Florida, is a big, big deal. That's a big deal. Like Emmitt Smith grew up in Florida, right? And he holds the record for the NFL. Well, I didn't believe him. I was just looking at him like, I don't think so, man. I'm not trying to judge a book by its cover, but this book doesn't look very good. And so I get on my phone, and I just start looking, Googling John Doe High School Football Florida. John Doe rushing record high school Florida state leader. You know, just any kind of algorithm formula I could put in there to find. Nothing. Not a blip, not a word, not a link, nothing. Nothing that his mom posted years ago that she thought he should have won it, right? It just wasn't there. Just wasn't there. And so we get in the car and I was like, that dude is full of it, right? Well, a few months later, he gets let go from his church. Why do you think he gets let go from his church? Lying. Deceit. Like, he was telling his congregation that he was sick on a Sunday morning. And then people in the congregation who didn't go to church that morning, apparently, would see him at the mall. He's like, what? I'm like, come on, man. So you could just see, I don't want to follow you. I don't want to trust my life to you. I don't want to get on this mission with you. Like, it's just too much. There's too much at stake. So if you think about calling and then moving down into character, this is permission to play. So as we're bringing people onto the team, you're asking this question: can I trust you? Can I trust you? And here's what I think is super encouraging. What's super encouraging is this, is that the first principle of leadership, what people, specifically followers, are looking for in their leaders is not a skill, it's a virtue. Now get this. Like, if you hear Guy preach this morning, Matt preached last night, I mean, you can't preach like them. I don't even know you. But you just can't, right? And then you just feel deflated. You think, well, could I ever lead? Could I ever be qualified? Could I ever be adequate enough, right? But here's what people are looking for. They are not first and foremost looking to get in line with somebody because they have a great skill. That's empty leadership. That fades over time. But what you're wanting in somebody is when you look at them, you see substance. That you say, I'm willing to get in line with you, next to you, beside you, behind you, hemming you up, holding you, because I trust you. And it's not that I trust your gift. Those things come and go. Those things are cheap. Character, it's expensive. It's not developed in a second. It's developed over time. It's forged. It's hard. And so a man or a woman who has character, it tells me something about their life. There's a humility. There's a teachability. There's a willingness to receive. And before somebody with character is ever a leader, I know this, they were first a follower. They were first a follower. And if you want to know how to lead, you have to always remember what it's like to follow. Because you, leader, are always first and foremost a follower unto the Lord Jesus Christ. And if you can't follow him, you can't lead anybody else. And so when we talk about trust, I'm thinking about trust in two ways. Personal trust and professional trust. Personal trust and professional trust. Personal trust is this. I am who I say that I am. I am who I say that I am. Professional trust is this. I do what I say I'll do. You think about it in the context of your church, your organization, whatever you find yourself in. If somebody comes in and they don't have professional trust, but they have high personal trust, it's like, I trust you, man. Like, I trust that you are who you say that you are. But if you can't do what you say you're going to do, like if you can't deliver the work, I can't trust you to do it. Like if you're bringing on a worship leader who can't lead worship, what are we talking about here? Like, it's great that they're called unto the Lord. The Lord loves them. Praise God. It's great that they feel called and maybe other people affirm it. And it's wonderful that they are who they say that they are. But if you can't trust them to step up on the platform and lead the people, then you can't go forward. You just can't. I mean, churches do it all the time. They just shouldn't. So professional trust, I will do what I say I'll do. Personal trust, I am who I say that I am. Think about it like this. Have you been burned personally by a leader? You've had that leader that you trusted, and then they betrayed that trust. They were not who they said that they were. I've had that. It's probably some of the most painful leadership realities that I've walked through. We've had staff members on our team who said that they were one way and then come to find out either through their own confession, but usually through the Lord's exposure of their life, that they were not who they said that they were. And the damage is devastating. It just is. It's never isolated, y'all. It's never just you and your little pocket and your little thing. Like, it's always has an essence of collateral that the fragments go out and they embed into other people's hearts and lives and realities. It has an impact. That the personal trust betrayal to me is a much higher betrayal than the failure of professional trust. Professional trust is just, we can move on, this is professional. Personal, it's here. But two have to be in place, both of them equally important. I'll give you this example. You think about when Samuel was going to find the king, and he was going to anoint a king. He shows up at Jesse's farm, and what does he do when he gets there? Who does he look to anoint? This is not a trick question. He looks to anoint the oldest and the tallest and the best looking son, right? And then the Lord says, this isn't the guy. And so then he does what he thinks he should do, is he's looking again at the next tallest, the next oldest, the second best looking, right? So you can just see his worldview here, that he's looking at skill, that he's looking at external values. He's looking at what maybe the world placed as this is valuable. It's kind of the idea of if we win to Christ this footballer, if we win to Christ this really popular person, that just think of the impact. And the Lord has said, I have built my church on the back of fools for thousands of years to shame the wise. So what I want you to look at is not the external realities, but the internal realities. And he works his way all the way down the line. And he says, it's this one, the one who wasn't even there. The one after my own heart. You think about John chapter 4. What's the Lord looking for? He's looking for those who worship him in spirit and in truth. Brothers, sisters, your heart before the Lord matters. Your character matters. Your disposition, your posture matters. We move from character to competency. Here's a little phrase for competency. It's not enough that you love Jesus. There's actually a job to do. Okay? That sounds harsh, maybe. It's not enough that you love Jesus. There's actually a job to do. And think about it like this. You're looking to bring somebody onto your team, right? You're thinking about bringing somebody onto a church staff, maybe in your context, actually allocating financial resources this way. And resources, by definition, are scarce. They're not in abundance for anyone. There's a limited reality to them. So to allocate some here means that we're not allocating some there. And so it's wonderful that you're called. It's wonderful that you have high character. But it's not enough that you simply love Jesus. There's actually a job to be done. And if you can't do the job, you can't do the job. And this, candidly, is where I think the church has, at least the church in the States, has dropped the ball significantly. It's become kind of a fraternal bro culture. So the understanding is like this. Man, dude's a great hang. Love this guy. Here's the phrase. He's going to kill it. That's our phrase. I don't know if y'all use it. He's going to kill it here. There's no interview. There's no assessment if he's actually ever killed it in the past, right? So we don't know if he can actually do this thing. We just know that we like him. We like being around him. And we're going to get to that. That matters. But if we're looking at kind of the full portfolio of faithfulness, you can't overlook competency. Like in bringing somebody in to do a job. Now, part of the leadership responsibility is this, that I have articulated to you the expectations of what this job is, right? So that's first and foremost. If I can't tell you what kind of job I need to be accomplished, then I'm not ready to hire you. I'm not ready to bring you onto the elder team. I'm not ready to commission you in our church as a deacon. I'm not ready to bring you onto the launch team. If I cannot articulate to you what the expectations of this particular role is. But once I've articulated those expectations, then guess what? I expect you to do what? Meet them. Satisfy them. Do them. Like you would never hire somebody to be a web developer who couldn't develop the web. So then why would we hire a pastor who can't pastor? Why would we hire a leader who can't lead? Why would we hire an administrative assistant who can't administrate or assist? And so what happens is that the church gets all jammed up because we think, and this is true, that we need to be loving and gracious. We do. 100%. 100%. True. True statement. Next statement over here is that we kind of over-harmonize it, and we get so kind of jammed up in ourselves, we're afraid to have an actual clear conversation that's compelling and true. Because we think, gosh, this is going to hurt somebody's feelings. Well, I am not somebody who loves hurting other people's feelings. But I'm also not one that wants to perpetuate mediocrity in the church. I'm also not one that wants to squander resources in the church. I'm also not one that's going to placate to this person's particular feelings to the detriment of everybody over here who they can't lead, love, or care for faithfully. So then I'm willing to kind of lean into some of the awkwardness of those conversations for the sake of the greater whole. And to do that in a way that is gracious and loving and shepherding and careful, but clear. And if that feels weird for you, if that feels weird for your context, if that feels weird to have a set of expectations, you think, man, this is works driven. Like, this dude's expecting performance. And I'm saying, yes, I am. Because what I'm talking about over here is work, not salvation. We've already covered that. Like, you're loved, called, and kept in the Lord. You're secure in Him. Your name is written in the Lamb's Book of Life. Praise God. Now watch what happens. We start to conflate, okay, church membership with working for the church. It's different. This, you don't have to have any competency. Can I get an amen? You've got members, some that have none. And how bad would it be if your membership process required a competency test? It'd be awful. It'd be heretical. Like, it would be everything against what Matthew was talking about today about church in hard places. Like, if you had some kind of membership affirmation process that said you must have a certain set of skills or competencies to join this church, what does the Lord say? You believe? You're in. And that's church membership. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about working at the church. We're talking about leading at the church. It's not the same thing. Like, you cannot be in this and still be in this. But if you start to confuse and conflate and overlap the two, then you get into some really funky space. Because what I'm talking about over here, here's a phrase that I heard a buddy said. We will love you for free. We are paying you to work. Don't get them confused. Like, we love you for free. Grace is abundant and evident. But when you made the decision to step over here into this space, and now I'm talking about in a staff role, you have made a decision to step into a different type of relationship. And now there's a relationship that exists, at least in the States. You're a part of an organization, a 501c3 nonprofit organization, where you receive a paycheck, right? And because of that, there are actually additional things that are being asked of you over here. And even if you're not receiving a paycheck, even if you're a lay elder, even if you're a deacon in the church body, you're a key volunteer, there's an expectation for you here that is not the same expectation for all general membership. Does that make sense? Okay. So competency. I'd say this. Let me kind of bring it back to thinking about bringing somebody onto a staff team. There are times in our context, we have a lot of business professionals, and where I have thought they are sitting in the congregation asking themselves this question, or making this statement, rather. This would never fly where I work. Like, this would never fly. Like, the fact that I sent you an email and I haven't heard back from you for 2 weeks, that's insane. Like, I'd just get fired. It's unacceptable out there. But for whatever reason, man, we're super busy doing all kinds of the Lord's work at the coffee shops. And, you know, it's just... But there's a level where I wonder what our congregation is wondering about how we operate at times, specifically in the area of competence. Are we okay just kind of perpetuating mediocrity? Or do we think about like Colossians 3, where it's like, I woke up today longing to work as unto the Lord. So then who, more than the Christian, should show up and long to give it their all because of grace that has been afforded to them? Like, who, more than the Christian, should wake up in the morning and think, I get to do this? Like, I've already said that I sense a strong calling that this is what I want to do, and I'm stepping into it, so I want to give it my all. Let me just give you a word of warning as you're kind of looking to bring people onto your teams, especially in church planning context. You ever gone to the grocery store hungry? Okay, what happens when you go to the grocery store hungry? Talk to me. You buy the wrong thing. It feels so right in the minute, right? What do you buy? Good, healthy stuff?
No.
No, you buy junk, right? You buy the stuff that just seems so necessary right in that moment. You spend more than you wanted to. It costs you more than you hope to spend on your way in. And you leave and you feel pretty good about it until you get home. And then you got to eat it. And don't grocery shop hungry when you're building your team. It's just better to wait. It's just better to wait to add the right person than it is to, in that moment, satiate that hunger with the wrong. Because down the road and down the line, it's way more costly letting go of the wrong than it was waiting for the right. And I've made that mistake, and I just want you to be mindful of it. One more quick point. Think about this. Ministry's hard. I get it. But it's not rocket science, right? There are some jobs that are super, super hard. Most of the time, ministry shows up down here at the level of mediocrity because we're lazy, not because it's complicated. Because it requires something of us and the oversight is not as tense. So it requires more kind of self-motivation, self-discipline, learning first and foremost to lead myself before I lead others. So just make sure that your ministry isn't squandering because you're lazy. It's super, and people are going to believe you. You're like, it's so hard. So hard. And you just play the kind of poor is me ballad. And your church will go with you. And they'll feel sorry for you and glad they don't do what you do. And then they won't join you when you cast vision for them to join you down the road. Because who wants to show up in a job that sucks as bad as yours? Right? So just make sure that it's not being perpetuated with a false narrative that's kind of fueled by our own kind of laziness or lack of initiative from self. I told our staff several years ago that Matt alluded to it a little bit last night, that the world will make exceptions for exceptional people, and you're not exceptional. So just get on with yourself being honest, dependable, and trustworthy. Like, the world will make exceptions for exceptional people. That's true. Like, there are some people who just, the rules just don't apply. You know those people? Like, there are people in your country, there are people in my country who just show up and go to the front of the line. There are people that they can speed or they get an escort as they speed. I remember years ago, LeBron James wanted to go to a concert. He just got a police escort. Why? Because LeBron James, that's why. So if I show up and think, I'd like one of these escorts, like, you just don't get in, right? But if you build your culture around the fact that you are exceptional, you will build a culture of exceptionalism. But I just want you to know that you're building a house of cards. Because here's the reality. Nobody knows you, and nobody cares about you. Just don't. I don't care who you are. So Matt's like super famous here, okay? And we go all over the world, and people know Matt. It's amazing. It's amazing. He's like 500,000 Twitter followers. My next door neighbor, when I moved into my house, 2 miles from our church, lost person, okay? What do you do? It's always that awkward when it's like, gosh, please be okay with this. I'm a pastor, you know? One neighbor, that was the last conversation we had. And then she asked me, oh, really? That's neat. Where do you pastor? I was like, the Village. The Village Church. It's the really big one right down the road. Okay, you know where the Chick-fil-A is? We bought the old grocery store right there in the Chick-fil-A. And she was like, oh, that's great. Could have cared less. Could have cared less. And here's what's crazy. She represents a whole neighborhood of people who don't care. Who represent a whole city. They don't care. Who represent a whole state. They just don't care. They literally don't care about you. All right? And so if you kind of walk forward thinking that you're exceptional, because you're Guy Mason, or you're Matt Chandler, you're fill in the blank. You're a church planter with 18 people, and you create this kind of culture of exceptionalism. You have built your life on a house of cards. So you should rather be building your life on becoming trustworthy, dependable, and faithful. The task is too big. The work is too challenging. And the mission is too wide for us to start puffing our chests thinking that we're something. Let's lay low. Let's pray. Let's till the soil. Let's preach the gospel and win hearts. Capacity. Capacity is this. It's aptitude and margin. And just for the sake of time, let me say this about capacity. This is probably where I spend the vast majority of my conversations. So capacity is thinking about aptitude and margin. This is like this. What's in her? Like, how much potential does she have? How far can she go? How many plates can she spin? What's her capacity for leadership? For me, that's super intriguing. I love seeing this in people. I love seeing people kind of activated into leadership. I love seeing leaders at the threshold of their growth and being challenged and stretched. But the reality of capacity is it speaks to limitation, because there's a point at which you can't go anymore. So easy way to get this is I'll often ask people, did anybody play sports in high school, right? Most of the room, some of the room, yeah, we played in high school, okay? Rugby, can I say rugby or do I have to say AFL? What's the thing here? Okay, all right. Strong opinions, okay. Anybody play rugby in high school? Okay. Anybody play rugby at uni? See what I did there? Okay, all right, all right. National team? Anybody play for the national team? Okay, why not? Not good enough, right? That's why. Because it's like if you could, you would have. And what's super, super hard, and this is hard for me, this is the hardest one for me, is there will come a day, and there have been times in my life, when my ambition outpaces my aptitude, and I have to come face to face with that gap. I wish I was 6'3". I'm 5'10". I can't do anything about it. Like, it just doesn't matter. Back in the day, there was a guy named Allen Iverson who played basketball for the 76ers, and he had this famous rant where he talked about practice. Like, what are we talking about, practice? Because he didn't have to practice. Like, it just didn't matter. He could just show up and be better than you. That guy frustrates me, right? Because I'm willing to put in the work. But I could go and I could shoot and I could hoop and I could do drills, I could do speed drills, I could jump. I could do that every single day. I could get kind of the Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours. And guess what? I probably wouldn't have made my varsity high school team. Just doesn't matter. So the fact about capacity is there's just a limit to which you can go. And you can't go any farther past that. You just can't. And here's the scary thing about it. I don't know where the limit is. I go to the kind of the edge of my growth. God grows me. He stretches me. I get a little bit more. I get a little bit more. And I'm there. And I'm stretched. And I'm kind of feeling it. I grow into it. But then there comes a time when it's like you take one more step and now I'm drowning. I'm off the edge of the cliff, to mix metaphors. So think about it like this. Maybe you got a team of missional communities, groups ministry, and you got a guy or a gal who's leading your groups team, and they're killing it, to use the phrase from earlier. They got 10 groups or 10 communities that they're overseeing. Then that thing grows because of their leadership, and it grows to 20. It's unbelievable. It doubled in a year. You're seeing great growth, great leadership. This person is just rocking along. Then it goes to 30. You promote them. They're now groups director. They oversee community and assimilation, right? Then groups goes to 50. And all of a sudden, things start to flounder. Are they called? Yeah. They were. They are. Character? Absolutely. Competency? They've got it. They know this world. So what's happened? Like, what's happened? Why are they floundering now? Why did it seem like they went from an A player to a B player? You ever had that? It's just capacity. Like, there just comes a time when 50 groups seems insurmountable when 40 didn't. What changed? I don't know. They just hit their limit. Like, with everything that's going on, this is the one that's the most dynamic and that's more art than science. And you just candidly have to learn it through experience. It's the idea that sometimes you do all the right work and you study and you study and you just miss it. because you thought this guy or this gal had more in her or more in him than they had. And other times you find that you can just kind of keep giving to this one, and they just keep growing and growing and growing. And I have yet to be able to find out what the magic formula is. These are the hardest conversations that I have, because these are the conversations where we're coming in and saying, it's not working. And I love you. You've done everything right. It's just too much. So over the lifespan of the Village Church, this conversation has been one that we have every single year, multiple times a year, because it just kind of kept stretching. And we found that people started kind of drowning. It's just hard. It's just really hard. I watched a doco. Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
All right. It's the first time I've ever heard that was this morning. Called Slaying the Badger. Anybody see this 30 for 30 ESPN Slaying the Badger? It's about the Tour de France and a guy named Bernard Hinault. Bernard Hinault was a cyclist from France. He won the Tour 5 times. He's pretty good. And he wanted to bring an American over. And he brings this American over to ride with him. And Greg LeMond. And this is in the mid-80s. He comes over. LeMond and Hinault, they're a team. And the idea is this. Hey, you come ride for me. And the plan is I'll be on the platform as the winner. It's a team sport, but one individual winner. And then the next year, I'll ride for you. So they do that. LeMond rides for Hinault. Hinault wins his 5th. And then LeMond, it's his turn to be the leader. And they get into the race, and Hinault just can't handle it. The competition, the juices start flowing, and he's just like, man, I'm going to go ahead and have to win this thing. Okay? So he goes back on his word. Character. And so they start jostling and dueling for first place. Well, there's another guy on the team named Andy Hampston. Okay? Andy was super good in the hills. The narrator, and Guy said it a different way this morning, the narrator in the doco said this: there's 150 riders in the tour in the 80s, but there's only really 5 or 6 guys that can win it. Because you got to be good in the hills. So you've got to have power. But then you've got to be good in the time trials. So you've got to have speed. But then you've got to be able to hang in there for the 1,500-mile race. So you've got to have endurance. And there's only, of the world's best cyclists, just about 5 that have all 3. So Hampston is riding, and the coach kind of says to him, hey, they're vulnerable. This is your chance. Take it over. Win the tour. Think about this. His whole life he's been cycling. And he sees an opportunity to kind of lean out of the peloton and take it. So he says he leans out and he starts to kind of have dreams of the yellow jersey. And but then he has a moment of clarity and a moment of humility and a moment of keen self-awareness. And he says, I can't win the tour. I just can't. So he leans back in, and he plays his role to perfection. So he paces it in the hills. He does his job. He does what he and he alone was supposed to do on that team, and the team won. If you think about how many of us long to maybe lean out of God's call, lean out from our aptitude, lean out from our gifting, lean out from our ability, lean out to chase after this jersey, this kind of platform, the success or whatever, without considering with keen, humble self-awareness. I'm not wired for it. I can't do it. And brothers and sisters, I'll just tell you this. That's hard for me. The way that I'm wired, I am an achiever and I want to win. There's some really good things in that, and there's a whole lot of not good things in that. So for me to say, I can't do it, is hard. And just to complicate capacity even more, sometimes you don't know until you've leaned out and give it a go. Good luck. I mean, that's just it, right? There are times when you just have to lean out from the peloton and go and plant the church. Sometimes you've got to lean out from what's comfortable. Sometimes you've got to lean out from what's known. Sometimes you're right there on the threshold of your growth and you're thinking, God, unless you put it in me, I won't be able to do this. And I lean out and then I start to pedal and I go. And all of a sudden you think, my gosh, I can do this. God has put this in me. It's there. And you start to pace it differently. There's no way of knowing unless you have the courage to lean out and then the humility and the self-awareness at the proper time to lean back in. Last, chemistry. Chemistry is this, fit and feel. I know I said I was going to leave time for questions. And I totally lied. I didn't intentionally lie. So I'm going to spend the next 60 seconds giving you chemistry. Fit and feel. It's just giving you permission to say, I want to do it with this person. I don't want to do it with you. Okay? And that feels weird in the church because we love everybody. We just don't like everybody. Okay? Do you know that? There are people that I love in the Lord. And that's it. That's it. That's enough. Lord bless you, right? I love you. I don't want to spend time with you. I just don't. Chemistry is not, let's get a bunch of people around us who look like us, who think like us, the same gender as us, okay, the same perspectives as us. We need people who come in and offer a disruptive chemistry. You've got to have that. What I'm talking about is those people who come in with their disruption that I enjoy them. That I respect them, that I can link arms with them. And if that feels super weird for you to say, there have been people who have had all four of the C's, calling, chemistry, or calling, character, competency, capacity, and it gets to chemistry, I'm just like, I just don't jive with them. I don't want to do it. I don't want that guy in our elder room. Why? I just don't like him. I don't like him. And you have permission to say that. You know what Paul said to John Mark? Bless you as you go, right? Like his ministry went this way, okay? It went that way. And it wasn't like this, well, we don't know the details, but we know enough to say and to see that that was okay. And John Mark picks up with Barnabas. Do they have fruitful ministries? Yes. And then Paul picks up with Timothy. Do they have fruitful ministries? Yes. Man, life is too short. The gig is too hard. The weight is too heavy to jump in a foxhole and look to your right or left and think, oh, God. Okay? So chemistry is just permission to say, I want to do this with you. I want to do this with people like you. Okay? I went long. I don't have any time for questions. I love you. I'm sorry. I just got energized by you, and I'm grateful. So, Lord bless you. Wow, what are we doing? Are you up? Okay.